Hello, and welcome to the Tommyknocker Tapes. The Tommyknocker Tapes are podcast interviews of Creed Repertory Theater's resident and guest artists, with the main focus being on practical, useful advice for the actor from diverse points of view. In this podcast episode, I sit down with Broadway veteran Patrick Ryan Sullivan. Pat has a long list of Broadway credits, including Gaston in Beauty and the Beast, Julian in 42nd Street, and a number of roles in Titanic. Most recently, he just finished playing the ruthless newspaper tycoon D.B. Norton in the new musical Meet John Doe at the Goodspeed and Ford's Theater. In this episode, Pat talks about the major differences between Broadway and regional theater, the major similarities between golf and acting, and just how exactly he made it through 800 performances of 42nd Street.
Reaper 19, this here's the rubber duck.
So I'm sitting at the top of Tommyknocker Tavern with Patrick Ryan Sullivan. And Pat, I'm going to start off by asking you the same question I ask everybody. And the question is theater vital?
Yes. Yes, no, it's completely vital. I mean, if you look back, even back at the, you know, when the Greeks, that's where everybody went to get healed, was the theater. Hmm. You know, and it's the way that people have always told, you know, whatever message they want to tell. And, all most great works of art or theater, you know, are turned into theater at some point anyway. And it's, you know, it's, I think it's completely vital to our society.
So now you have worked in myriad places, a lot of work in Broadway, as well in regional theater. So you've had the opportunity to work with a ton of actors, and hopefully, being on Broadway, many of them very talented.
Mm-hmm.
So of the best that you've worked with, what are some of the habits that they have that I can steal that you believe make them the best?
I tell you, I think that right down to the basis of it is preparation. Is probably the best thing, you know, because you really can't fully commit until you're fully off your book or doing what you're doing, and I think the more prepared you are, the more that you're able to commit to what it is you're doing. Mm. And the people that I always find amazing are people that very quickly in the rehearsal process are off book and then start making choices, good or bad, right or wrong. But you get them all out of your system. And if people wait until opening night of a show, or, you know, 3 or 4 days before a show or whatever, being seriously, you know, a lot of people do, you know, if you wait to 3 or 4 days, then your first 4 or 5 shows are what those people who were prepared were doing the 3rd or 4th rehearsal.
Right.
So the point is you'll never catch up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can never be as prepared or as ready to go as a performer.
So what do you spend most of your time doing in prep for a show? Like, what's the number one thing, aside from obviously read the script, read it again, read it a third time? What do you spend most of your time doing aside from that?
Oh, that's a tough one. I really adore script analysis. Mm-hmm. I don't try to memorize too much. You know, I just really kind of read what's going on, and you hear what other people are saying about your character and what you're saying about your character, and then deciding if what they're saying is true or not.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so I think most of my work revolves around script analysis and where, and I, you know, I'm very visual too, and that's, you know, obviously in the process we're in right now, is my mind goes very visual.
Uh-huh.
And I know that as actors and, you know, as trained actors, you get taught a lot of things in school.
Uh-huh.
And I think the last thing that the professors forget to tell you is now forget everything that you were just taught.
Right.
Because the truth is indication's not bad. You know, people try to completely wean you away from indicating. And I'm not necessarily saying, I am doing this is the smartest thing to do. But I think any type of way that you can paint a picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I love that Peggy, when she sings the line about the coffee cup, you know, it's that she has it because it's visual.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very visual. And when you guys are paying the change, mm-hmm. and I know this means nothing to you people out there in pod
paying
world,
change in Urinetown is the current show that we're doing at the moment.
But when you guys are paying it and she's singing about it, then you're locking it in with 2 different ways.
Right.
You know, and I think that a lot of times that we forget as actors how visual things need to happen.
Right.
And then to the point, I had a guy tell me one time, and am I allowed to use language on this?
Go ahead.
Not strong. I wouldn't use strong. As we were talking about a scene that I was doing, and I was like, I'm just not feeling it. I'm not, and it was a very dramatic scene. I said, I'm just not feeling it. I'm not getting it. And he said, I don't give a shit if you feel it.
Uh-huh.
The most important thing is if the audience feels it.
Right.
But if you can feel it also, then good for you.
Right.
You know, then it's an extra step. He said, but if our main concern, and sometimes we as actors get wrapped up into us
right.
and what we're doing yeah. on stage, instead of going, you know what, there's, you know, 200 to 5,000 people sitting out there watching us.
Right.
And that's the most important thing, mm-hmm. because they're the people we're telling the stories right. to, doing and we're that. Storytellers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have worked in all of these different settings. My question is, how should a regional theater actor adjust to Broadway?
I think the biggest thing and the most shocking thing that will be to somebody who's not worked inside the Broadway field is mm-hmm. the speed of it. Uh-huh. You know, it's when I did Gaston in Beauty and the Beast, I put the show up in 8 days.
No kidding.
And have you seen that clink dance?
Yeah.
It's one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my life. Mm-hmm. But it's the expected professionalism, mm-hmm. is that you're going to come in there prepared,
right.
like we were saying earlier, mm-hmm. and then being able to put it out there. You know, be prepared the first day or two, make choices for the next 4 or 5 days, and mm-hmm. then be ready to go on. And be ready to go on with, when I did Beauty and the Beast, I never met another actor until my opening day.
Okay.
And I did the whole show in a rehearsal space with the dance captain.
Really?
My opening day, we did a put-in, uh-huh. so I got to say hello to everybody and got to do all the scenes with them once.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the click line, I'd never done with other people. I'd
right.
just done it by myself, and then suddenly you've got other people.
Right.
Andrew McCardle, who was my bell at the time, was not called for my put-in rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see her before the show because she was in makeup and costume. So I literally kissed her on stage before we ever said hi to each other. You know, so there's just a rapid-fire speed, and it's everything that you've ever, you know, everything that you've trained for your whole life, and then realizing mm-hmm. it's going to be a whole lot faster.
Right.
I did Titanic. I covered 5 people in Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
We rehearsed maybe once a month. You know, maybe we'd rehearse 1 or 2 of the characters.
Right.
And there was one character, Hitchens, that I actually never rehearsed, but I tracked and kind of watched.
Uh-huh.
And the last week I was in Titanic, I went on for it.
Oh, boy.
So the expected thing, the easy out would be to say, well, I've never rehearsed it.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, we're professional actors.
Right.
You know, so you learn your stuff and you do your stuff. And I think that's the biggest shock. Is that you're just expected to do things that you get patted on the back for sometimes.
I see.
You know, it's like, oh, God, you did such a great job. It's like, well, you did your job.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, that's what we paid you to do. How should actors, such as myself, if we were looking to get into a show on Broadway, how should we go about getting there in the first place? Should we look for agents? How should we prepare for our auditions?
I've always had an agent since I've been in New York, and I've had several.
Mm-hmm.
I booked my first Broadway show without an agent.
Really?
So it can be done without an agent. I don't think an agent is the most important thing at the start of a career.
Okay.
And sometimes I actually think it can be detrimental,
uh-huh.
because you then, you're waiting for your agent to do the work that you should be doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
To begin with. My first year in New York, what I did, and I think a tough thing for a lot of actors, are to try to figure out exactly who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And how people see you.
Right.
Because we don't get the ability like we do in college, or if you're Val Kilmer.
Right.
You know, it's either stream or you go, I want to play a 90-year-old man in this show.
Right.
Because they're going to be 45, 90-year-old men show up. You're talking about playing a 25-year-old guy.
Mm.
You know, 1,200 25-year-old guys are going to show up.
Right.
So my first year in New York, I did a spreadsheet, and I wrote down every audition, what I sang, what I wore, everything, what my response was, if anybody said anything. And then I started being able to see, oh, if I wear a black tight shirt and engineer boots,
right? They start,
you know, that I start getting callbacks. And while people actually see me for the bad guy,
mm-hmm.
because for me it was like, in my opinion, and if you look at me, which you guys can't see out there in Radio Land, is I've got a big head of curly hair, and I've never been cast as curly.
Wow!
Because I would be cast as Judd.
Uh-huh.
And it took me the longest time to realize how to truly sell myself.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I would go in as curly and then kind of not do it.
Right.
And then next time I went in for a bad guy, and it just kind of gets, it just makes sense. And I think auditioning as much as you can absolutely possibly do it, because it's a skill.
Right.
You know, that you go in and you refine and you hone and you figure out how to do it.
Would you say there's anything different about Broadway auditions as compared to others?
You know, that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bail out of this question, but with a good answer that I think is a good, honest answer, is the minute that we start assuming that something's different and we start trying to play to that assumption,
mm-hmm.
we're going to screw ourselves.
So just go in.
The only thing you've got, and the thing that each and every one of us have as actors, is that nobody, I don't care who it is me.
Mm-hmm.
and nobody is you. Right. And I know it sounds very, very trite and weird, but mm-hmm. the minute we figure out what that is and what people see us as, and we go in and be ourselves,
right.
then if you get turned down for a Broadway show, no big deal. Mm-hmm. But if you're going in trying to act like somebody you saw do a Broadway show, then mm-hmm. you're just going to be a cheap imitation of the guy who did it.
Right.
Yeah, because you're never going to be him.
Yeah.
You know, so I what I have found, and there are no rules, mm-hmm. what I found is I think that people want to hear you interpret music mm-hmm. instead of how beautiful your voice is. And there are some characters, if you're going in for Christine and Phantom, yeah, you better
sing it.
You better let them go.
Right.
You know, and you know, Belle and Beauty and the Beast, even, you know, you better have a beautiful voice. But for the most part, I think that they're wanting to see, going back to what we said earlier, is that you can tell a story.
Right.
You know, because that's all it's about.
Mm-hmm. Now, another one of the actors at the theater, who's a younger actor, asked me specifically to ask you, how exactly did you go about getting an agent? I mean, how does that process even work?
Let's see if it is the truth or not. I've had 9 agents. I've been in New York for 12 years, and I've had 9 agents since mm-hmm. I was in New York. Actually, 8. And my last agent saw me do Beauty and the Beast and asked me at the stage door if I wanted to be with him.
Wow.
That was luck. But then that's the thing, is then you've got to get yourself there sometimes before right. things are going to fall for you. You know what? There are a lot of agents in New York City. And like I said, I think that once you get an agent, you start going, well, I'm going to quit going to auditions then because
right.
I'm going to wait for my agent to do it.
Yeah,
my first agent in New York City, I got because I worked with a guy who was in her agency. I've got several people in my agency, mm-hmm. and I've more than 5 times that have I got people in the front door that have been turned down.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of it's got to do with, you know, other people that know you and say, hey, you ought to meet my agent. You ought to do this.
Really?
Because, I mean, the mind blowers, my agency I adore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they're amazing people, and I love my agency. And I go by and hang out a lot just because I like hanging out with them.
Right on.
Daily, they get in the mail between 100 and 150 headshots. And what's great about them is they open every single one of them.
No joke.
A lot of agents just won't do it. You can walk outside back doors and see trash cans full of headshots.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll open every single one of them. And rarely, rarely is a mail-in going to do anything for them.
Okay.
You know, and it's an expensive thing. And maybe it will, maybe it won't.
Right.
Some agents have open calls mm-hmm. that you can go into. But I think the best thing you can possibly do is get a job close to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, and make sure it's a good show.
Right.
You know, not necessarily if you're good in it,
uh-huh.
make sure the show's good.
Okay.
Because even if you get them to come see a show that's 2 hours of a very bad show and mm-hmm. you're very good.
They saw 2 hours of a very bad show.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but I think, and I'm going to go back to, I think you said, you know, as a young actor or somebody first going to New York, how do you go about getting it?
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about
go
it.
About trying to get work.
Uh-huh.
So I worked, I got a Broadway show 4 years and a half after I moved to New York.
Mm-hmm.
I never did anything in New York for those first 4 years except act. I did, I don't know, 8 shows a year maybe
okay.
that I would do. I steadied act, never got a job through an agent until I got a Broadway show.
Uh-huh.
And I always had an agent.
Yeah.
But all those jobs came out of open calls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it happens. You know, I got Titanic out of an open call.
Wow.
You know, and then it kind of lets the... Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't waste my energies on trying to find an agent. I'd waste my energies on trying to find jobs.
Nice.
And then that's how you end up doing a job with somebody, and you know, there's always going to be a name type person, and they like you, and they say, hey, you ought to meet my agent. Or my agent's coming to see the show. I'll introduce you to him afterwards.
Hey, yeah.
But the most important thing is getting work.
Getting the work in the first place.
Yeah.
So this is another Creed actor submitted question.
Mm-hmm.
And it is specifically, what exactly is going on in your head during a show? Are you worried about, are you thinking, what's the next line, what's the next scene change? What is your process during a show?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, I think, you know, ideally, and in my ideal world, is I'm kind of living in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got to be totally aware with what's going on.
Right.
You know, so I really don't try. Not, I mean, we all do it, but I honestly don't try to think about what the next line is or what's right. going on. And I literally try to listen to somebody. And then I think that goes back to script analysis earlier. If you really make sense of what's happening in the scene to yourself and not just memorizing lines,
mm-hmm.
then you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
You know, then it just kind of makes sense.
Okay.
You know.
Having had done a lot of shows, Broadway contracts that, you know, go for days and days and days,
Years and years.
Actually, as it probably it should be. How do you keep that fresh?
That's a good answer. Good question. I mean, I'm going to answer it with something that's going to be obvious that I've been asked this before.
Uh-huh.
But do you know Jerry Rice? Who
yeah.
that is? So Jerry Rice retired when he was 41 years old from major football.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a serious dude.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept asking him every year after he's like 38 or 39, which is old, to be
doing
that to your body. Not exactly. old necessarily, but to be doing what they're doing to their bodies. And his response, and it's something that I've wished that I had said, but I'm going to use it because I believe it wholeheartedly,
uh-huh.
is he said he never had a perfect game. And he said, and I always, always, always want to have a perfect game. He said, so I'm never going to deprive myself, and I always want to get out there and try to have a perfect game.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I did 42nd Street 800-something times. And, you know, there were times when it was really close, and there were obviously times when the lines were said right and you're standing in the right place,
sure.
which doesn't necessarily mean that it's a perfect show.
Right.
And I never did a perfect show.
Mm-hmm.
So I would never want to deprive myself at the top of the show or going, screw this, I'm going to check it in tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's your opportunity. Because I believe it can happen.
Right.
I'm not blowing that off, but
I'm
hard on myself.
Uh-huh. It's about setting a high bar, I guess.
Yeah. But that's to me why it was very easy to continue doing, because you just continue every night. You go, why didn't that line work? What happened?
Mm-hmm.
And I love when you get together with a group of actors, the tour of 42nd Street, that's all we did. You know, we would finish the show and the main five of us would go out afterwards and it's like, we're still missing that beat.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not landing the way it needs to land.
Right.
You know, and we would talk about it and say, all right, well, how about tomorrow we try? You know, and then maybe 3 or 4 weeks into it, you get it.
Uh-huh.
And then you go, yeah, we finally nailed that beat, but we lost the one on which, you know, so what, so it's really an ongoing growing organism. And my goal is just to try to do the perfect show so it doesn't make it to a point that, well, I'm going to just check it in tonight because nobody's there. I don't, you know, there's no producer in the house. Or,
right. Having had worked, again, with a myriad of actors, I'm sure you've dealt with actors who use this style, that style, this acting teacher, this singing teacher, Meisner or what have you. What do you think, first of all, of the idea of schools of such and such? And do you follow any? Do you particularly like this one as opposed to that one?
As a means to an end, you know, I think if they're all basically trying to do storytelling
mm.
and whatever it is about you, and if you can find one that'll narrow it down, you know, that tightly for you, I've not found one that would narrow it down completely that tight because I know that I'm very inside out, but I'm very methodical in the way that I look at a script and decide what I'm going to do and really try to work on that.
Sure.
Very Meisner in the point is that I love repetition,
mm-hmm.
as I love doing a scene over and over and trying different stuff and trying.
Right.
And then I'm also amazingly outside in because I can never find my character until I put my shoes on.
Uh-huh.
You know, so for me, is you kind of pick and choose and grab,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything, you know, whatever you can get out of it.
Is there a particular singing style or teacher?
Mm.
School?
That's a tough one. I was trained as a singer, and again, I think it's one of those that you let go.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, I couldn't even go into the type of training that I had,
uh-huh.
you know, except I trained, you know, classically, and basically know that by the end of it, I'm not going to hurt myself.
Huh.
You know, so I can allow, for me, I allow myself to go places that I know I'm not going to hurt myself, and I'm very thankful
uh-huh.
that I was taught that.
Uh-huh.
But I could not even begin to tell you a style. And I think that for me right now, the most important thing is that I'm telling a story when I'm singing.
Right.
And I find if I ever think about, and you can hear this also when you hear people sing, if you start thinking about your note that's coming up,
mm-hmm.
most of the times, I won't say most of the times, a lot of times people will, when they're thinking, oh God, here comes my G, here comes my G, here comes my G, whether they crack on it or not,
uh-huh.
it's under. Or it's not quite there and things aren't quite there. And I find if you don't worry about it
mm-hmm.
and you're like, you know, singing, nothing's going to harm you.
Right.
And when your big note's coming up and you're basically singing, nothing's going to harm you, not while I'm around.
Right.
The note's usually in pitch. It's usually there. It's usually,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you allow it to be free and relaxed,
mm-hmm.
you know, as an actor. And I think that, you know, anything, if that puts anything in there, is I think being relaxed while you're singing is the best thing you can do, because the minute you start worrying about, oh shit, here it comes, you know, you're going to tighten up and it's done.
That's gonna be bad.
And the truth is we're all going to crack at some point, mm-hmm. so, you know, you might as well be relaxed. You know, exactly. Why be stressed about it? You know,
it's... Right. So, I guess as an artist in general, if I could just put this huge umbrella over us all, what are the things that you do outside of your art that fulfill you, that refresh you, and that don't necessarily have to do with the theater?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm a musician and yes. songwriter, but that's even kind of in that
in
vein.
The art of its own, yeah.
I love golfing. I love driving. I like being outdoors. Mm-hmm. You know, anytime I can play a sport, I like to do that. It's on the rare occasion now, but, you know, if I can ever find a pickup right. basketball game or a pickup, you know, softball game or something like that, I love that. And it, you know, golfing to me is an amazing sport, though. You know, just with you can find out anything you want to know about an individual golfing with them, and it's golfing relates to so much. Oh, this is going to sound so bizarre. So much to life and so much to our craft. I think the better of a golfer you can get, the better of an actor you can be.
No kidding.
And in the sense of, I'll tell you why. Is the amazing thing about a golf swing. Uh-huh. And you're out there for 4 hours, too, first of all, so right. it's maintaining focus. Mm-hmm. But the amazing thing about a golf swing is the softer you swing the club and the more proper you swing it, mm-hmm. the farther the ball will go. Right. Now, in our minds, if you really knock the shit out of one the first time you get up there and mm-hmm. you barely swung the club,
right.
it's really hard to mentally not go, oh, wait till I hit this one.
Right.
Same thing with acting, in my opinion, is that so you get a laugh line. Mm-hmm. You've got to, you know, you've said your ta-da,
right.
and you get a laugh, and you're like, oh, shit, did you hear how they responded to that? Wait till I get them tomorrow, and then you're like, wah!
Right.
And you know,
crickets.
You know, it's just, you know, it's an amazing sport, and it's an amazing sport to keep, you know, and I know every time I'm out there, I'm still trying to keep it slow uh-huh. and keep it going, and I try to relate that into other parts. It's kind of a Zen sport, really.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, acting is, you know, similar in mm-hmm. that. Is you got to be able to be consistent without being boring. Uh-huh. You got to be able to know why you landed the laugh, and mm-hmm. then if you push it, it's going to be worse.
Right.
You know,
yes.
just
yes.
you know, there's it's very interesting.
I always regard it as a four-letter word.
Golf.
Golf. Yes.
And besides, it's a good place to drink.
So, lastly, I'll finish up. By asking, where do you see, and you in particular, where do you see Broadway going?
Hmm. Oh, that's tough. You know, I think that there are so many pendulum swings in our business. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look back at the, you know, say the Chorus Line time, and, you know, Chicago and Chorus Line came out the same year, and Chicago kind of died. You know, Chicago's, what a brilliant show, but it was, you know, a very presentational with a narrator and things right. like that going on, and then suddenly we turn into, you know, high gothic drama, and everybody's writing Jekyll and Hyde and Phantom of the Opera and all that stuff, and then suddenly we hit these sung-through musicals, and then everybody wants to write a sung-through musical because of the way it... And the trend now mm-hmm. is that they're doing jukebox. You know, Johnny Cash, John Lennon, the Jersey yeah. Boys, Elvis Presley, the Beach Boys. There's a Neil Diamond one being worked on right now. I just did a Grateful Dead one last year. And that's seven, and I know that there's more. I know that I'm missing them.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a trend. And it's just hard to tell where it ends up. And what I love to see is I love to see a show like Spring Awakening that just mm-hmm. happened, that's a book musical
right.
that requires acting, that's poignant,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a, you know, a play that was banned right. 120 years ago
mm-hmm.
that somebody brought back because it had something to say, and the music fits with what's going on. And it'll be interesting to see just even with that, is with that trend, mm-hmm. you know...
Will we get back to book musicals?
Well, are we going to, you know, have a couple years of you know, under 20-year-old musicals.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, God, people love kids. You know, because, I mean, a producer's mind is obviously, you know, a lot of it, especially in the Broadway realm, and that's mm-hmm. what I love about Creed, is that it's a nonprofit theater.
Right.
So Moe's not necessarily thinking about making money.
Mm-hmm.
So our season is a pretty intense season. Mm-hmm. You know, for somebody to have picked and without any real name show.
Right.
And, you know, and some really beautiful pieces, you know, that people can learn stuff from. And I admire Mo with that. You'd never find a Broadway producer saying, you know, or, you know, let's say Roundabout, who does do termed things on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And they might do a 5-show season, a 6-show season. Mm-hmm. Never would you see them do the schedule we just did. Hmm. You know, Urinetown obviously was on Broadway.
Right, right.
You know, but there's no way that they would, they're going to have one of them in there that's How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Right.
You know, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to make up all the money that we just lost.
Lost. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's trendy. And I hope that it becomes about book musicals and being poignant, mm-hmm. and not being as touristy, mm-hmm. though that's where they're making their money.
Right.
You know, so it's tough. You know, it's tough that you... I've stood out in front of TKTS where they sell the cheap tickets, right. and hear how people decide to see shows.
Really?
You know, like there was this one lady one time, they said, okay, there's these 4 shows that are playing right now. I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change. Mm-hmm. And she's like, is that a Broadway show or is it an off-Broadway show? And the person said, it's off-Broadway, but it's right around the corner and the cast is phenomenal. Uh-huh. You know, they all have Broadway credits. Well, we only want to see a Broadway show.
Wow.
So that was knocked out just because it was off-Broadway. You know, and it ended up getting down, I mean, she ended up seeing the producers, uh-huh. but there were a couple of others, there were like 2 others that they had never heard of, one of them was it was a play that was the play that just won the Tony this year. It was that play, and he said, she goes, what would you recommend? He said, I'd recommend this.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant play, it's going to win all the Tonys and stuff like that. And she said, well, is there music in it? You know, so, I mean, Broadway's it's an odd thing, but there's always, you know, 1 or 2 really good things happening. Mm-hmm. And the doozy is, you know, trending wise, it seems bad. And I've had this argument with people before, and they're like, it's just not the way it was in the good old days.
Sure.
You know, and it's like, okay, cool. Name me one musical that opened in 1941. And the answer is Oklahoma.
Right.
But, and then I was like, so how many musicals do you think ran on Broadway in 1941? I mean, they used to close after 5-6 shows.
Right.
You know, so it's like, well, 200, 300? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one out of those 300
right.
made it. You know, so hopefully the trend will continue to be that there's 1 or 2 great shows a year. You know, and just continues to be that way.
Well, Patrick Ryan Sullivan,
yes,
thank
sir.
You very much.
Dr. Bouchard, thank you. It was an official handshake, if you could have seen it.
And I would like to officially thank you for listening. And if you'd like to find out more about Creed Repertory Theater, you can visit us on the web at www.creedrep.org.